When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. I'm Maya. This is my Stephen King podcast. If you heard the first episode, you know that I have a website called dairyconnection.com where I attempt to track all the connections between Stephen King books. How do I sound?
You sound great. Do you want to intro me as a guest?
Yeah. So I'm here with Eric Price, star of the famous podcast Frank and Eric, Internet Famous, also my husband.
Yep, veteran podcaster and loving and devoted husband.
Yes, he keeps reminding me how much he knows about podcasting. I keep resisting all his advice.
Yep, I'm here and I'm ready. I'm ready to offer all of my expertise.
About podcasting.
About podcasting and Stephen King's It.
Did you know there are other worlds than these? Would they all float or get a bad disease? Let's all go to Castle Rock. We can hitch a ride with Christine. And you will find the Dairy Connection. And we can party like it's 6/1999.
So we're going to be talking about It. We just saw the movie.
Yes.
Today. So I like to start my episodes off by talking about everyone's relationship to Stephen King.
Sure.
So what's yours?
Oh, okay.
Short version.
Short version is, so I read a lot of Stephen King as a kid.
Like what? What books?
I vividly remember reading Pet Sematary when I was in elementary school. I was a very early reader, and my parents my mom would take me to the bookstore, and she was like, you could get any book you want. That was the deal. Like, go pick out a book, you can get it, whatever it is. And, you know, it was like the 80s, and I was like, I thought horror was like badass, you know, because like horror movies were huge. And so Stephen King was really popular then. And so I started reading Stephen King books, and I remember reading Pet Sematary. I think that was the first one that I read.
Okay.
My sister read a lot of Stephen King, so we would trade the novels. We would get them, and she would usually read them first and then give them to me. So I read, as a child, I read Pet Sematary.
Like the classics.
Yeah, the classics. I read Pet Sematary.
Christine, Carrie, that stuff.
Cujo. Probably read Carrie. I read Misery. Mm-hmm. What else? I read a whole bunch. And I've always continued to read them.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
So you read the classics, because I feel so Stephen King has played kind of a big part in our relationship.
Yeah,
when we met, I think I was reading Lisey's Story when we met. Is that right? Or I had just read it.
You had just read it. Yeah.
And I told you about it, and I remember after our first date, you sent me a picture of yourself on your stoop in Brooklyn reading Lisey's Story.
Yeah, you said it was your favorite book. So the next day, in a cheap effort to impress you, I ran out and got a copy.
And it worked.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. So, because I feel like at the time, you weren't that into Stephen King. I feel like I talked about reading Lisey's Story, and you were like, oh, I'll pick it up, but I don't.
I had taken a little bit of a break from Stephen King. I read Stephen King a lot when I was, like I said, younger. I remember reading when I was around 20 and I was working at a bookstore. Randomly, I picked up The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Did not care for it.
Yeah, that's one of his best.
That is, I think, the only Stephen King book, with the exception of that cell phone one.
Cell.
But even Cell, the structure of the story was enough to keep me going.
Yeah.
Like, it was fine. Yeah. You know, it was just like I was watching
a really
bad
movie. I'm glad I just bought The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon while we were on vacation the other day.
I picked up The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon based purely on its cover, because it had this really nice looking cover. And I just remember thinking, like, oh, it's Stephen King. It's readable. It's short.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's going to be great. And I just slogged through that and hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we both read Lacey's story.
Yes.
And then I remember we both read The Shining together as a couple's activity.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fun, or reread,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And then we got engaged in front of Stephen King's house.
Yeah.
In Bangor.
That was really cool. We did the Stephen King tour.
Yeah.
So, we had a very Stephen King-centric trip. And the culmination of it was that we got engaged in front of his house.
Very romantic. So, we just saw the movie today.
Yes.
What were your overall thoughts? Because we haven't talked about it.
Okay. First of all, I want to talk about...
Remember, this is a short form podcast. Eric's podcast is usually 2 hours per episode. Yeah. So
I like to get everybody warmed up. I like to... So, all right, let me paint a picture.
No.
There I am sitting in Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn. Maya, my beautiful wife, is sitting to my right. And to my left, there's this gentleman who's man-spreading super hard. And his foot is pressing against my foot. So I had to keep scooting my feet over toward you. And then he ordered a milkshake and tried to use the cup holder in our shared armrest for his milkshake.
All right.
And it was like a milkshake with a big, big thing of whipped cream on top and a cherry. Like not a paper cup full of soda with a lid on it. It was like an ice cream sundae in the middle of our armrest.
I'm concerned this podcast is not going to be very short. Okay.
So there we are. And
just did you like it or not?
This is just my sort of, you want my overall,
about the movie.
Thumbs up or thumbs down on the movie? Thumbs up. I enjoyed it.
Not enthusiastic?
I will probably be more critical about it than most people, feel like. Because I deeply loved the book.
Like, so did I.
Super, super hardcore love the book. Also, I grew up watching the TV miniseries. So it was really hard for me not to compare every element of it to that.
Yeah.
And I understand that I watched the TV miniseries during a very like impressionable, time in my life. So my recollections of it are definitely different than the reality since we just watched clips.
Yeah.
I've personally thought that Tim Curry's Pennywise was better, at least aesthetically, than the new Pennywise.
So I think you're insane.
Okay.
So I love the book.
Okay.
I haven't seen the miniseries. I never tried to watch it because from the moment I was born, basically, my mom has always told me that it's the reason she's scared of clowns.
Okay.
So I've just avoided it. You just showed me the highlights of the miniseries and it looked ridiculous. And Pennywise sounded like an old Jewish man from Brooklyn.
I agree.
It didn't seem scary at all.
So that's why I was careful to say aesthetically.
But aesthetically, I feel like the new one is way scarier.
Am I allowed to curse?
Yes.
Am I allowed to say gross things?
We swear on... Well, what do you mean gross?
Well, so... I don't know if I'm going to say the gross thing right now, but I was just curious. Anyway, so here's the thing. It was too CGI'd. It was
the new one.
Yeah, it was too CGI heavy.
I will
heavy.
Say there's something creepy about the old one because it's literally just a dude standing there.
Yes, I think that
it feels a little more real.
I think a guy painted up, just Tim Curry in face paint, is so much scarier.
Right, and I can imagine if I can imagine that man showing up in my apartment and like saying something gross to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like there's a reality element to that that's more scary than, let's face it, I think the new Pennywise looks like it could be a video game character.
But a really scary one.
Yeah. But it's not like a creepy clown who just appeared. It's like a weird kind of like reptilian clown thing. You know, like it's clearly a monster.
Yeah.
And
as opposed to a guy.
Yeah, as opposed to a guy.
I do think, I mean, if you think about like the themes with like Bev and her rapey dad and all that stuff, like there is something scary about just like an angry Brooklyn dude just showing up in your house.
Yeah. I think I don't know. I think it's more about the visuals for me. Like,
yeah.
I thought that the new Pennywise, the way he talked and how menacing he was, that was really cool. I just didn't, like, when they had close-ups on him, I could see that, there was, like, cracks in his forehead to make him look old, and I was like, oh, that's just like computer texturing that somebody sat there and did. It looked fake to me. All the bad guys looked really fake.
Yeah.
In this movie.
That's fair.
And that just kind of, I felt like when you're, especially when you're watching something that takes place in the past and it's these kids and it's like, you know, like to have this super modern looking.
It did sort of take you out of like the 80s aesthetic.
Yeah. So that's my thought on that.
We don't have to go to 5 minutes for every segment. It's just 5 minutes tops.
Okay.
So we could do 1 minute.
I could have gone way longer.
I know. Than 5 minutes. That's what she said.
Okay.
So one thing that's really controversial is their decision to break this up into two movies, where the first movie was just the kids and the second is just the adults.
Yeah.
What was your take on that?
Well, it shocked the people sitting next to us.
Oh my God, that was so good. that was like when the credits started rolling?
Yeah, we're obviously doing spoilers.
Yeah, there's spoilers in this.
You know, at the end, the logo comes up again. It says It, but it says Chapter 1.
Right, did they ever have opening credits? Like, did it say, oh yeah, I guess it said It at the beginning in the sewer.
Yeah.
Because apparently this one is called It Chapter 1, The Losers Club, but they never say that.
Right.
But that's the official title. So I was surprised, like, they really didn't. I think what they wanted was that guy's reaction, which was, oh shit, there's a second one. Like, that guy clearly had never heard of any of this.
Well, what I will say, one thing that this movie succeeded doing is that it turned this gigantic Stephen King sprawling multi-generational story into a reasonable movie that you don't have to know anything about it or care about it in any way to enjoy.
Yeah.
So like, that's a success when you consider other Stephen King movies like The Dark Tower, for instance.
You could list literally any Stephen King movie.
Right. And those fail almost totally because they really just provide illustration for a story that you already know. It's almost like banking on you knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, that's what that guy looks like.
That's honestly what I loved about this movie is I felt watching it like any person could watch this and enjoy it and feel like this is an amazing story. Stephen King is a great writer, which always validates me because every time I bring up Stephen King, people are like, oh, he sucks.
Yeah.
And he doesn't.
No, he's great.
Yeah.
I think that's just like pseudo-intellectual posturing when people say that they don't like Stephen
King. I think it's people who've seen a bad movie based on one of his books.
And they've never read
it. Like The Lawnmower Man, for example.
Hey, we don't talk bad about The Lawnmower Man in this house.
You never said what the man next to you did at the end of the movie.
Oh, so it said It, the chapter one, and there was sort of a beat, and he goes...
Loudly.
Oh, they're making another one?
That's not what he sounded like at all.
I can't do an impression.
Yeah.
Oh, they're making another one?
More like that, yeah. He was very surprised, and we laughed.
With a mouthful of vanilla milkshake.
Yeah, well, I love the movie, and I felt like I was expecting to be annoyed. Because so in the book, for people who haven't read it, it goes back... What are you doing there?
I was just moving some items that were...
In the book, it goes back and forth between like... them as kids and them as adults, and so it's all very like intertwined, and it sort of reveals the story as it goes on both ends. So I was expecting to be annoyed by that, but I actually thought it was a really good choice for the movie, because I think, like you said, like if they had tried to cram the whole thing into one movie, it would have been terrible. And if they had tried to cram like just half of the story into one movie, it would have been like, you know, the Harry Potter thing where it's like you're just left with a cliffhanger for no reason.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's tricky about it, they divided the TV miniseries up the same way. They did all the kids stuff. And then,
oh, really?
Yeah. So the first half is the kids.
I didn't know that. So why was everyone so mad about this?
I don't know. Unless I'm remembering it incorrectly, but
it's
I'm
possible,
pretty
you
sure.
You were 10 when you watched it.
Yeah. I could have sworn. Anyway, who cares what I think? The only thing that I found weird about that is... that if when you divide it completely in half like that and you make it all the kid stuff and then all the adult stuff later, the conclusion of the kid part is so kind of quick and easy, you know?
In the movie, you mean?
In the movie and in the story.
Yeah.
Like in the story, the conclusion of... I mean, in both cases, the conclusion is like, we have to do this again. But I feel like if you were just watching it and you didn't know what the hell was going on, at the end of that, you'd be like, wait, what? The clown just went away and they're cool.
I gotta say, so Mike, who we're gonna be calling in later for this episode, he didn't know anything about it going into it.
Yeah.
And when he saw, he was like describing the movie to me, and he was like, I don't understand how they're making a sequel because it seems like they killed the clown at the end.
What?
And I was like, what are you talking about? You can't kill it. It never died. That's like the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is it comes back every 27 years. But we're watching the clock here.
Yeah, we're running a very strict.
We need like a signal so you don't just make a weird face.
Okay, I'll do this.
Okay. All right. Anyway, he really thought that the clown died, so he was like, "I don't know what the sequel's about." But
yeah,
I think they will find it. My guess is that in the next one, it will also flash back to the kids.
Yeah. In this segment, can we talk about the phallic imagery throughout the movie?
Was there?
Well, the bolt gun.
Okay.
Pretty intense phallic imagery. And
everything else just came from Richie, I feel like. Just making like innuendo jokes.
And then when Beverly shoves the rebar down Pennywise's throat and she's the one who's been like, it's very strongly implied that she's the one who's being sexually abused.
Yeah.
And the way she defeats the bad guy is by literally forcing him to deep throat a piece of steel.
Oh, is that the gross thing you were going to say?
No, I was going to, the gross thing I was going to mention, this is also sexual imagery, is when Pennywise opens his mouth, he's got a weird lamprey vagina mouth.
Okay. We'll just beep that out later.
you can't say that?
You can. I really didn't pick up on that stuff. I hear you.
To the people who listen to Maya's
The Dairy Connection podcast
on Anchor.
And other places.
And other places where podcasts are sold. You know, if you have any thoughts on the sexual imagery in it, hit us up, you know? Get in the Anchor app. Call in. Tell us your thoughts, because I think it was pretty obvious.
Look, I'm not saying there's obviously a lot of sexual. Well, I have this as my last note to talk about, but there's obviously the whole orgy situation. It's not a non-sexual story, and I think like so much of the movie was like all those boys just staring at Bev's boobs and just being like, "Oh, there's a girl near us." Like I think there was a lot of overt sexuality, and I think to your point, a lot of sort of innuendo. But
yeah. Well, I think that, I don't want to harp on this too much. I think that, like, there's obviously a when it comes to the group's fascination with Beverly, I think that men would probably be more inclined to see that as being very innocent.
Yeah.
I don't know if it seems, I could see how it seems gross.
No, I mean, I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah.
But let me, so on that note, one of the...
Sorry, I'm derailing your show. So before we start this next segment, I just want to check in. Has it been helpful that I've been sitting here through this whole thing with a flashlight under my chin in full clown makeup?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to.
It's really like putting me in the movie.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to create some theater of the mind for everyone else, but I need you to be reacting.
Okay. Should I start screaming?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I actually was thinking this morning when we were getting ready to go to the movie that I wish that we had planned ahead and dressed in clown makeup.
Yeah. That would have been great.
Because, like, nobody in Brooklyn ever does that stuff. You never get the thing where, like, remember when Harry Potter came out and everybody dressed up in, like, Harry Potter outfits?
Yeah. And then we would walk into the theater late.
Yeah, we did get there late and disrupt everybody.
Like 3 minutes too late.
Yeah. So I want to complain about something for a second.
Let it rip.
So I always look for Stephen King connections, as you know. I've started this really annoying habit of every time we see a Stephen King movie, I bring a little notebook and take notes during the movie of all the connections. And I first got irritated by this when I saw the Dark Tower movie, because that should have been chock full of Stephen King references. Yeah. And there were like three. And I felt the same way about this one. Like, I know it, unlike the Dark Tower, it is not the center of the Stephen King universe the same way that Dark Tower is.
Right.
But in a way, which I'll get into, it is. Like, it is mentioned in so many Stephen King books. Like, clearly to Stephen King, this is, like, near the hub, if not the hub.
Sure.
And I just feel like so there's this whole sort of, like, Stephen King renaissance happening right now. I guess it happens every 5 years or so when they make 100 movies out of his books. But, like, right now, all of it, like this year, Dark Tower came out. It, Gerald's Game is coming soon. I think there's another show. Oh, the Stephen King universe one. I think it's called Castle Rock something.
Okay.
But the point is, this year, suddenly everyone's like, oh, Stephen King, really good. Whatever, which is, you know, bothering me, as you know.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, I get that there are different writers and directors behind each of these movies. Why are these people not leaning in and creating a real universe? Like, it's so easy. If you've read any Stephen King books,
I guess
it would be so much more fun.
There's probably a whole bunch of reasons. Like, it's not like...
I'm sure there are reasons. I'm just saying, like, if you want Stephen King fans to love these movies,
yeah,
there's a really easy formula,
right,
to do that.
Well, the people who are making these movies, first of all, it's not like when a production company gets the rights to, like, Marvel, right?
Right.
So you have all these individual properties, but they're all being made by the same production company, right. And then, like,
I totally, you know, get that. And yet, if I were making a Stephen King movie about, like, Lisey's story, unconnected to anything else,
yeah,
I would, like, put in little things related to the other movies. I would have, you know how in The Dark Tower at the beginning they had that thing that said, like, the Ted Corporation was one of the production companies?
Yeah.
Put that everywhere. Why not?
Right.
That's, like, a cool, you know, throwback to the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Every visible number should add up to 19.
Right.
That was pissing me off so much. So there, I was writing down all the license plate numbers in it, and none of them added up to 19. One added up to 18, which made me so mad.
Okay.
It's like, it's so easy. Just everything should add up to 19. There were a bunch of close-ups of flowers. None of them were roses.
Right.
Just make everything roses.
Yeah.
And, like, just have little crossovers. So, like, there was the old woman who saw Georgie near the drain thing, have her say her name or have, like, a little label on her house that shows that she's someone from Derry. Like, yeah, there's so many easy things to do there. And I just
have somebody listening to a ball game where Tom Gordon's playing.
Sure. Right. That's exactly what I mean. Like, there's so many opportunities for this.
Yeah.
And, like, in it, I really was hoping there would be them. And there were all these really cute nods to the book.
Yes.
But there weren't, like, and there were, you know, all the, like, subtle references to Pennywise. So, like, anytime a TV was on, somebody in the background was like, you should go float in the sewers, which was, like, cool.
Yeah.
But it could have been much cooler, I felt like. So I want to talk about my favorite part of the movie, and then I want to talk about the orgy.
Okay.
Because we have to talk about it.
Sure.
So my favorite part of the movie was there's a part where the girl in the pharmacy tells Eddie that his drugs are placebos.
Yeah.
And so he goes home to his mom and he says, Mom, what's with all the, you know, what's my sickness? And she's like, oh, you're really sick. And he's like, these are gazebos.
Yeah. It
was the best.
That was definitely the big laugh moment in the theater.
It was just, it was so unnecessary, but so fun.
I liked that the movie had a good balance of scares and laughter.
Yeah.
And they did a really good job with that. I think that, like, they did a good job of balancing the laughter and the scariness because it is a coming of age story, really. So, like, it should be funny. I think that they relied a little too heavily on jump scares. And because they did that, and they probably had to do that for the people who are going to go see this movie and they don't give a shit.
For a scary clown.
Yeah. And so they had to do that. But I think that that's why they weren't able to do things like build a creepier atmosphere of the kids can see this and the adults can't. Like, they couldn't take time to just create weirdness. They had to have shit jumping out at you right away. So, but yeah, I really like that you could laugh throughout the movie.
It was nice. So let's talk about the famous orgy scene. So
I'm in.
So for those of you who don't know, the big controversy about it, in general, but the novel especially, is that in it, there is a scene towards the end of the book where I believe it's when the kids have just defeated it when they're little.
Yes.
And then they're lost in the sewers and they're like, the story is that, like, they're having trouble getting out of the sewers and they keep getting lost. And so Beverly is like, hey, this is happening because we're not, you know, together. We're not on the same page. So she's like, I know, let's all have sex with me. And there's, what is it, six dudes and her. And in the book, I just read it again to refresh my memory. It's literally each one of the six boys has sex with her just in a row. And it's weird. I would have liked to come into this saying that it was less weird than everyone thinks. But having read it again, it is more weird than I thought it was. It seems very gratuitous. And there are a lot of parts in the description of it where Stephen King makes sure to point out that Beverly is too young to understand any of this, too young to really, you know, have a good time.
But don't they, I don't want to be the apologist, I guess, for this stuff, but, like, isn't it, doesn't he also go out of his way to indicate that, like, it's none of them really know what's going on.
Yeah, none of it. Right. It's definitely not like a rape scene. So, like, and she, in fact, convinces all of them to do it. They're all really uncomfortable with the idea.
Right.
And again, like what I said earlier, I think it's sort of about her, like, taking charge of her sexuality and, like,
right,
you know, whatever. And in there are some nice things in the passage. Like, he sort of talks about how, like, he talks a lot about how it's bringing them together and how much they love each other and how, like, they're all very gentle with her and whatever. So it's like, it's not upsetting in that way. But I think if you have just read 900 pages of it and then you suddenly get to this scene where Bev's like, hey, I'm naked, let's all have sex in the sewer, it's just a little weird. And they didn't do that in the movie.
Right. Understandably, they did not do that in the movie. I'm just going to say, having read the book, I was prepped for it. Like, somebody mentioned it to me before I got to that part in the book. I did not find it upsetting or jarring.
While you were reading it.
While I was reading
it. I felt the same way. When I was reading it, I did not realize that was a controversy.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, when I was reading, like, reviews of it, I was like, oh, shit. Like, people are really upset about that.
Yeah. And I just found that really strange. I felt like the people who were really upset about that, again, I can be wrong, I get it, but I just felt like they were really cherry picking an individual thing in the book to be upset about, because...
No, I think any book where you have a child orgy is going to upset people. They're like 11 and six dudes have sex with one girl.
Right.
Who has already been abused by her father.
Right.
It's like not a good thing.
Right.
But I feel the same way that while I was reading it, it did not upset me. And then when I thought about it later, when I saw everyone else screaming about it, I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
But I also think it's worth noting, like I was saying to someone the other day, like Stephen King is really good at like, making people and situations really horrific because that's reality.
Yeah.
Like people are gross and scary. All right. So we're going to call in my friend Mike now, who I think I already mentioned this, but he had no idea what it was about when he saw it. I think he knew there was a clown in it, but he told me after he saw it, like, he made me watch a YouTube clip of the opening scene, and he was like, there's just a fucking clown in the drain. It just eats this kid's arm. And I was like, yeah.
Where were most people?
I don't know.
Like, I guess, I don't know. I guess, like, maybe they were off having, like, adventurous lives or something.
I thought you were going
to
say orgies.
No, maybe everybody else was having orgies when I was a latchkey kid sitting at home watching the It TV series. It's like, oh, I wish I had somebody to tell about this. I guess I'll just hit rewind and watch it again. Have fun at your orgy, guys.
All right, so that was little Eric. Now I'm going to call in Mike.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Mike, I'm here too.
Oh, what's up, Eric? How are you?
Good. We're as you know, we're recording a podcast about It.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me, so you watched the movie, you knew nothing about it. What was your impression of the movie?
I thought the movie was awesome. I didn't know much about it. All I knew about it was what I remember from being a kid in the 90s, that there was this really scary book and television movie starring Tim Curry as a crazy clown that kills children. But that's all I knew. I didn't know about any of the scenes. I didn't know anything. And I saw the movie the other night, and I loved it. Like, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah. You've been talking about it all week.
I have been. That's right. I've been telling anyone who will listen.
Yeah. And so I remember you told me that you were really shocked by the scene where Georgie gets his arm chewed off.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it would go that far that quickly in the movie. Like, I think, you know, without knowing much about the story, I thought like Georgie would see this clown and the clown would like befriend him. And then Georgie would run off and go home and have dinner. And then maybe the next day he sees the clown again and they become better friends and then better friends. And then before you know it, something terrible happens. But no, they were just like, nah, we're just going to rip this kid's arm off right now. We're just going to rip this kid's arm off, drag him into the sewer, and Georgie is dead. Welcome to It.
All right, so this is my favorite part. I'm starting to think I should maybe lead my episodes with this.
Well, you know, don't want to blow your wad right at the beginning, right?
Well, not really how I would put it, but yeah, I guess. So let's talk about the connections, the Stephen King connections mm-hmm. in this movie. Mm-hmm. So in the movie, I actually didn't see a lot. I don't know if you caught ones that I didn't.
I did not.
You didn't get any?
No. I actually did not get any connections.
Yeah.
What I will say, this is not a connection thing, but I thought they did a spectacular job within the first few minutes of moving through Derry and
capturing Bangor.
Yeah, but capturing exactly. So like in the book, there's like two locations, right?
Yeah.
Or three locations or something. And they show all of them. And they're captured so perfectly.
Which were what?
There's the town, and then there's
Bolt Street.
Yeah, but there's the Baron. Is it the Barons?
The Barons, yeah.
Like they show those in succession in the opening sequence of the movie,
yeah.
And I was just like, oh wow, it really looks exactly like it's described in the book. Like
yeah.
It was, they did such a good job of adhering to that. I
yeah,
think.
It looks like the book. It also looks like Bangor.
Because it is, right?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, so Derry, the fictional town created by Stephen King, is based on Bangor, where he lives. And Castle Rock is based on Lisbon Falls in Maine, where we've also been.
Yeah.
And I remember when we went to Lisbon Falls, I was like, holy shit, this looks just like Needful Things. Like, it looks like how Stephen King describes it.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, write what you know.
Yeah. So the things that I noticed in the movie, obviously Derry. So, you know, there are all these references to Derry. There's all these Stephen King stories that take place there. Like I said, kind of a stretch. And then the only two that I really saw. So one was why are you making the face?
I'm just listening.
Oh, they mentioned the turtle multiple times. So the turtle, do you remember the turtle from It?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you haven't read The Dark Tower. So you don't know like everything about the turtle.
I know the turtle thing.
So at the end of the It book, when they actually defeat it as adults, I think, there's this big turtle named Maturin who, if you read Dark Tower, he's one of the guardians of the beams. And he, I think Maturin is the one who, like, he created the universe because he got sick and he vomited and that created the universe that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's a part where all the kids are swimming and one of them is like, oh, there's a turtle, and he like dives down. And then what's his name? Bill at one point grabs Legos that are shaped like a turtle.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was like one thing. But again, that's more a reference to It than to the universe. And then the only other one I got is that, like, when Bev was covered in blood, it reminded me of Carrie. But that's kind of it.
Yeah, that's a stretch, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll get into the connections in the actual book, but, like, for the movie itself, that goes back to my complaint of, like, just give me something.
I'll bet there's more somewhere. I mean, I like that they...
I Googled it. Nobody seems to have found any.
I guess maybe you should send the filmmaker a link to your blog.
Maybe I will.
Or website.
Maybe
I
will. In the book, there's also not a ton. So the thing about Stephen King is I feel like the more books he read, obviously the easier it is to find connections, because I feel like he's then like going back to things that he's written before. But in the book, there's three good ones that I know of. There's a few more that are sort of like smaller connections that I don't think are really worth mentioning. But
okay.
One is there's a mention of Shawshank Prison.
Yeah.
Which he mentions in a lot of his stories.
Yep.
But it's sort of like a side note.
Yeah.
So the two best ones are, one is, you remember the Black Spot fire? So that's where in the movie, Mike Halloran's, or is that Mike? No, Mike.
Mike's parents are.
Mike's parents die in the fire. In the book, they don't die in the fire.
Yeah.
And the reason they don't die in the fire is because Dick Halloran from The Shining uses The Shining to know that something bad is coming, and he rescues Mike's dad from the fire.
Oh.
So Dick Halloran is in that and then goes on to, you know, be the guy in The Shining.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then the other one is that Henry Bowers' dad drives a 1958 Plymouth Fury.
Oh.
Which you may remember from Christine.
Yes. I thought we would have seen that car in the movie.
I was really shocked that I didn't see it.
Yeah, that would have been so easy to throw that car into the movie.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Just park it on the street somewhere. Although Henry was driving like a muscle car of some kind.
That was like a Pontiac Firebird or something.
Why not give him a Plymouth Fury? Make it red. How hard is that?
Well, he was driving a car that was like really a staple of dirtbags in the 80s.
That's fine. But again.
But you give him like a vintage Plymouth Fury, that would be.
Well, it was his dad's car.
Yeah.
I feel like that would go in with his character. That it's like he took his dad's car to go out.
Yeah, he like steals his dad's car.
Yeah, because that's what happens in the book.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. That's all that's in the book. But what gets really cool, how much time, how are we doing on time here? Oh, we're fine. It is mentioned in a lot of other Stephen King works. And I think that's where it gets really fun. And that's where you start to see that Stephen King like really cares about it.
Yeah.
Can you think of any? I know there's one that you know of. No.
In.
Did you read 11/22/63?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Mm. So there's a really obvious reference in 11/22/63. So when, whatever his name is, Jake,
sure.
I think that's his name, the main guy in that book. So he's going back to 1963 to kill
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes. But he lands in Lisbon Falls, Maine in 1958. So like every time he goes back, he has to spend those 5 years there to get to 63. And there's one sort of go around where he ends up in Derry in 1958 and he runs into Richie and Bev. And they have a whole conversation.
Oh, I vaguely remember that? That.
And she says, "I'm Bevy from the Levee."
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's a really, that's one of my favorite ones because it's really, it really feels like not just a mention, but like a real crossover. It's like he ran into them in 58, which is when the story takes place.
Yeah.
So it's like he sees them when they're in the midst of all the it stuff happening. And I think they even talk about either the clown or like the kids disappearing or something.
Yeah.
So that's a really good one. In Insomnia, which has a lot of ties to the Dark Tower, which you, did you ever read Insomnia?
No.
It's really good.
That's what I heard.
Mike Hanlon from the books is still the librarian at the Derry Public Library in Insomnia. Also, fun fact, so in the movie, for some reason, they sort of reversed Mike and Ben's roles. Because remember, Ben is the fat one, and in the movie, he's the one who's like researching and whatever.
Yeah.
In the book, that's actually Mike. Hmm. So he's the one doing the research and like telling everybody what to do. So Mike goes on to become the librarian. So in the next movie, I'm not sure if it'll be Mike or Ben who's still in Derry. It might be Ben. Because I feel like they're really tying him as like the protagonist.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder why they would make that change.
Yeah, it was weird. In Misery, the main character, Paul Sheldon, reveals that he lived across the street from Eddie Kazbrak. Eddie was the one with the asthma.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So he like talks about Mrs. Kazbrak. In Bag of Bones, one of my favorite Stephen King books, Joe, the main character's wife who dies at the beginning of the book, one of her favorite authors is William Denbrough, which is Bill, Setter and Bill, who goes on to become a famous novelist.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Stuttering Bill, one thing that I could never get over in the original series, the adult version of Stuttering Bill was played by the guy from Little House on the Prairie with that, like, he's got like a birthmark on his cheek.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And, I don't know his name, but when I was a kid, I just couldn't stop staring at that birthmark. It's so distracting in the whole second half of that miniseries. I think he had a ponytail too.
Okay. We'll just cut this out.
Okay. Any Little House fans out there?
So I'm going to go on with the connections.
Oh, please. I didn't mean to slow you down.
All right. So in there's two terrible Stephen King books. Can you guess what they are? Remember when Stephen King was on like a lot of coke and wrote a lot of really terrible books, but there's two that are known for being terrible?
Yeah. Shit. What is that one?
I feel like you'll know when I say it.
It's not Needful Things, is it?
No.
It's that era, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's like the 90s.
Dolores Claiborne?
No. I mean, that one sucks, but not for the same reason.
Shit. Oh. The Tommyknockers?
Yes, that's one of them. And the other one is like the worst movie ever made based on a Stephen King book. Came out in the early 2000s.
Worst movie ever made.
There's like a...
Oh, I know this. I can't remember what it's called. Nightcrawler? No.
Dreamcatcher?
Dreamcatcher. Yes. Damn it. Yes. Okay. You knew I was thinking of the right one.
So there's two connections in those. So in the Tommyknockers, the main guy is like driving between two of the towns. He's trying to get away from the aliens or whatever. And he's hallucinating. And he sees a clown in an open sewer manhole. And it's described as a clown with shiny silver dollars for eyes and a clenched white glove filled with balloons.
What book is that in?
Tommyknockers.
Huh.
And then in Dreamcatcher, they at some point take a trip to Derry because they're like in the woods in Maine.
Okay.
And they see a plaque and it says, "To those lost in the storm, May 31st, 1985, and to the children, all the children, love from Bill, Ben, Bev, Eddie, Richie, Stan, Mike, the Losers Club." And then someone has spray painted across the plaque, "Pennywise Lives."
Ooh.
Pretty bold mention. And then I saved the best for last because there's a lot of It references in the Dark Tower.
Mm-hmm.
So one, there is a robot called Stuttering Bill, which is a pretty clear reference. Yeah. There's at one point, Stephen King, the narrator, says something about a certain paper boat you may remember.
Mm-hmm.
There is, so you know Stephen King is a character in the Dark Tower?
Yes.
So at one point, somebody who's like hanging out with Stephen King says that they like the show about the clown.
Okay.
And then two of the characters, Eddie and Susanna, come across a clown. And it says, he was bald except for two fluffs of frizzy red hair, one on each side of his head. To Susanna, this guy looked like Clarabelle the clown. To Eddie, he looked like Ronald McDonald. To both of them, he looked like trouble.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
Pennywise Lives, man.
Yeah. So those are all the connections I know of.
That's great. Is there a place people could go if they...
There is. It's called dairyconnection.com.
If they find more connections.
The official sponsor of the Dairy Connection podcast. So last thing I wanted to say is, like we said earlier, it takes place in Derry, which is based on Bangor, where Stephen King lives.
Correct.
And I wanted to talk about some of the things that we saw in Bangor were referenced in the movie.
Yeah.
You want to start?
Well, we saw the big water tower thing.
You kept elbowing me in the movie every time you saw the water tower, which was in there like 50 times in the movie. So there is a real, it looks exactly like that.
Yeah.
And Stephen King, I think he said, so when we were on the tour, I think they said that he, I forget what book he was writing, but there was some book that he was, maybe it was It, I can't remember.
I think it was It, yeah.
But he would like go and there's like little picnic tables near the water tower and he would go and sit there and write on his legal pad.
Yeah. That sounds exhausting.
Yeah. What else do you remember?
What else? Oh, here's something I wanted to ask you. So we...
Is this related to what I just said?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
So we did the tour and we went past that storm drain. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And they did a little gag. And there was a reason he mentioned the storm drain, like that specific one.
I think
one.
It was supposed to be that street was like Niebolt Street was based off of that street.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Is that the storm? Is that literally the storm drain that they shot in the movie? I was trying to tell. I couldn't tell if it was.
I don't. It didn't look so much like it that I was sure it was the same one. But it's definitely it's like close to the corner.
It's definitely downhill, close to the corner.
Yeah,
yeah. They did a good job of
finding
one.
When we did the tour, the tour guide went and got a fake arm and put it in the sewer and took pictures of all of us in front of it.
Yeah,
which was cute.
It was great.
Yeah. What else? Do you remember the other things?
What else?
There was the Paul Bunyan statue.
Oh yeah.
Which there is actually a very large Paul Bunyan statue in Bangor.
Yeah.
And in the books, if you've read it, and I'm sure this will be in part two, but there's a part where the Paul Bunyan statue comes to life and it's like, you know, 50 feet tall or whatever, and it tries to attack them. There was the Derry library, which looked a lot like the Bangor library.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think Stephen King like paid to restore or something. He's basically like rebuilt all of Bangor.
Yeah, yeah. He seems to be the one man industry that is driving that whole city.
It's great.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
And the last thing was the mafia thing.
Oh, the shootout?
Yeah. Thing? Do you remember what that's called?
No, but isn't that named as one of the things that happens like every 27 years? They're like there was the explosion at the Easter egg hunt that killed all the kids.
Oh, like that was one of the tragedies?
And then the next tragedy was like the shootout in the middle of Bangor that killed all those people.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like an intersection right in the middle of Bangor where
in the downtown,
downtown where this gang got into a shootout with the FBI or something. Cause they were
the mob.
They were the mob, but it was like, weren't they like, they were running like booze or something during Prohibition or something. Anyway,
we read all about it when we were there.
Yeah. There's a huge shootout, but there's a sandwich shop right on the corner that has this giant mural inside.
Yeah.
That
which
depicts
looked a lot
the
like
thing.
The mural that was in the movie.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah.
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 That was neat.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it looked, Derry looked like Bangor. Like, it had the little river and it had the, like, the bridge and...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they made any effort to obscure the fact that it was...
Do you think it was filmed there?
Totally.
Oh, okay.
I mean, at least all the establishing shots were there. I don't know if, like, the...
Yeah.
The actual scenes were filmed there, but definitely.
Yeah. Well, I think we've done this for long enough.
Okay.
Thank you for being on my podcast.
It was a privilege and an honor.
Anything else you want to add about it? Any other phallic thoughts?
No, I think that if you take the time to see the movie, that all of the phallic and vaginal imagery will speak for itself. And I don't think that you will think that I'm a moron for seeing
or
that.
Or a creep.
Or a creep. Also, if you haven't read the book, I cannot recommend it
enough.
It's
long, but it's so good.
So worth the read. I mean, yeah. It's really long, and that prevented me from cracking it for a long time. But oh my God, when I read it, I it's one of those books that I will always regret that I can't read it again for the first time.
Yep. All right, that's it. DerryConnection.com.
Check the website. It's on the internet.
Bye.
We can party like it's 6/19/99.